You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
Ahoy, awesome alliance of adorable and alert attendees. Welcome to Good Job Brain, your weekly quiz show and offbeat trivia podcast. This is episode 143, and of course, I'm your humble host, Karen, and we are your bumbling but barely beastly bunch of brain buffs.
I'm Colin.
I'm Dana.
And I'm Chris.
All right, without further ado, let's jump into our first general trivia segment, Pop Quiz Hot Shot. And I grabbed, of course, one random card from our 13-pound. Noel sent us 13 pounds of Trivial Pursuit cards. Here's one of them.
The box is one card lighter now,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, that's true. We're going to take a while working through these. All right. I have a random card, and you guys have your morning radio zoo buzzers. Here we go. Blue Edge for People and Places. What Western U.S. city passed a law making it illegal to pawn your dentures?
Oh, I hate these dumb laws. Yeah. I hate these.
It's not that dumb.
Western
Reno.
City.
Oh, close. Yeah. Las Vegas.
Yes.
Oh.
I can, it's not that, you know, random. What?
Okay.
I can see that happening a lot.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, it's kind of sad.
I'd like to go back and rescind my statement about hating
these. I know what you mean. Like, what state made it illegal that you can't drink lemonade on Sunday
between
2 and o'clock
like
and 5 o'clock?
Gilroy. You're like, what?
Yeah. That is a good one. Okay. Can't pawn your dentures. Yeah. All right.
Pink Wedge for Arts and Entertainment. Who played Moses, John the Baptist, and God on the big screen?
Is that Chris? Charlton Heston?
Yes, Charlton Heston. Yellow Wedge for History. What did Spain's King Charles V propose to build on the Isthmus of Panama in 1524?
What did Spain's King Charles V propose to build on the Isthmus of Panama in when?
1524. Dana.
Oh. I'm going to guess. A canal.
Canal.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Oh, you're the visionary.
Yeah.
Got it.
Panama Canal.
A man, a plan, a canal, Panama.
Yeah. No. Wow, that's a classic one. Classic palindrome. All right. Brown Wedge for Science and Nature. What Japanese electronic company's name is a combination of the Greek word for all and the Latin word for sound? Chris.
Panasonic.
Yes. Yeah. Panasonic. All right. Green Wedge for Sports and Leisure. How many seconds are there on an Olympic basketball shot clock?
On an Olympic basketball shot.
Everybody's staring
shot
at Colin.
I'm pretty sure these.
Chris buzzed in.
I mean, yeah.
45.
Incorrect.
Dang.
That's a lot.
I'm pretty sure that they've adopted the NBA 24.
Incorrect.
Okay, then I. Then it. Then
20.
Okay, I'll pass.
Not 20.
Then is it the college number of 35?
It's 30.
30. Okay, interesting. Okay.
So this is from Genus 4th.
Yeah.
It might have changed.
We'll have to look into it. I know that like international got a lot closer to NBA rules over the last several years.
College and NBA is different.
College and NBA is different,
so
yeah.
College is 35. NBA
college is 35
is
second shot clock. And 24? The games are shorter. Yeah, and NBA is 24 seconds.
Okay.
That's one reason that scoring in college is generally a lot lower than the professionals. Because you can hold on to the ball a lot longer. And there's just fewer minutes in the game.
It seems so random, like 20, like not 25, but 24,
divided by four quarters, six seconds.
It's more exciting, right?
No, Dana's right. It was the result of some formula of like we divided this many by this many by this many, and it came out to 24. Yeah,
that's a good number. That number comes up a lot.
All right, last question. Orange for wild card. What communications method did Phil Collins use to inform his wife of his divorce intentions?
Oh, yeah. This was a big deal, right?
What communications method?
Chris.
Fax.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I guess it's like the olden day post-it.
This has to be slightly weird.
Yeah.
In order for it to even be a trivia question in the first place.
Telex.
Yeah. Yeah. And he really has to write it in a black or blue pen.
Yeah. Yes.
Right. Colored pens.
Yes. Smoke signals.
She's like, we are getting
voiced.
You're getting devoiced.
Devoiced.
Wow.
All right. Good job, brains. So us four, we are big Game of Thrones
throne heads.
Yo,
is that what it's called?
No, that's good. Okay. I'm a throne head.
Throne sitters.
Throne sitters?
No. That sounds like something different. That sounds like we're constipated.
Of course, the trailer for the new season just came out.
Thronies.
Thronies?
Thronies.
Thronies. Oh, we are thronies. HBO just released recently the season 5 trailer.
Yeah.
And that got me thinking.
Right at the same time that George R.R. Martin's publisher said that book 6 is not coming out this year.
Yeah. Oh.
See, suckers. I knew it. You wasn't going to finish this.
Game of Thrones is a tale of many clans and areas fighting for the throne. And we've talked a lot of stuff about monarchy and royalty before in like weird little stories or questions, but we never had a one episode dedicated to royalty. So today we're talking about
one episode to rule them all.
That's good. Everybody's like crystal, Maybach, diamonds on your timepiece, jet planes, islands, tigers on a gold leash. We don't care. We are caught up in your love affair, and we'll never be royals. It don't run in our blood. This kind of love's just ain't for us. We crave a different kind of buzz. Let me be your ruler. You can call me Queen Bee, and baby, I'll rule. Let me live that fantasy.
Actually, this is something that kind of comes up a lot in Game of Thrones, and this is sort of what a lot of the plot is centered around, the idea of pretenders to the throne.
Mm.
Does anybody want to take a guess at a definition of what is a pretender to the throne?
You have a claim to a position that doesn't exist anymore.
So, it's yes, like, that is a good definition. That is one of the many different definitions. It is not necessarily that you are pretending to be the rightful king or anything like that, or if there's fakery. That is not necessarily the case. Let's say your dad, the king, is overthrown by his rival who has claimed himself to now be the new king, and you are the son of your dad whose head is on a spike, and you're like, well, I'm the rightful king. Maybe people agree with you that you should be, that it really is your throne.
Or maybe people don't.
But you don't have it. Like, you're living in a shack.
There has to be at least some legitimacy.
Claim to throne.
Yeah. You have to believe. Right. You have to believe that you have a legitimate claim.
You're not pretending.
Right.
It's not imaginary.
You're not putting on a fake mustache and glasses.
And those people, historically, there have been people who have actually tried to do that. Those are known as false pretenders. Like, they actually do show up and they claim to be so and so who everybody believed to be dead, but it's like, nope, I am that person. And typically they are found out, and not good things happen to them. They usually end up executed for treason. Yeah. But as Dana, as you said, there's a third category of people who might be tagged with pretender to the throne. And so I was actually watching, it turns out, one of them on television the other day, because I was watching a television show, Millionaire Matchmaker.
Oh, sure.
Don't judge him.
It is a reality show in which people with
on Bravo
$1 million. Yeah, on Bravo. BT dubs, where people with at least $1 million, possibly millions of dollars, but they can't get someone to date them. And so recently the show made a big to-do, and this is not the first time that they had done this, about how the matchmaker, Patty Stanger, was going to be fixing up a prince, a real live prince.
Bona fide.
That's a big deal. And so she had on her show just recently Prince Maximilian Ferdinand von Anhalt.
Sounds like a made-up royal name.
A German prince.
Yeah.
And you hear that, and it's like, okay, well, A, last I checked, I don't think Germany's not a monarchy. But I'm thinking, well, maybe, I mean, you know, like, Germany, by the way, is a federal republic. I had to look that up, but that's what it is. But it's like, oh, but you know, in Britain, they have the royal family, but it's not like the queen makes all the decisions about what taxes are. It is a ceremonial monarchy. So I'm like, oh, okay, well, that's probably Prince, you know, Ferdinand, whatever. He's in this sort of ceremonial monarchy. No. Very, very different. After World War One, the German monarchy, the current monarch during World War One being Kaiser Wilhelm, right? Mm-hmm. The monarchy was dismantled, like not like made ceremonial, but just
they were like no
gone right
yeah. shut yeah, it exactly. down
yeah
shut it all down. Wilhelm went into exile in the Netherlands, which it often happens when the monarchy is dismantled because they don't want him coming back and remantling the monarchy.
Right.
So Kaiser Wilhelm had a son, and his youngest son married Princess Marie Auguste. And she was another member of the German nobility at that time. Princess Marie Auguste lived through World War One and World War Two. She actually lived until 1983.
Oh, wow.
In her later years, the princess, remember this is the daughter-in-law of the Kaiser, did not have a whole lot of money. Not only did she not have a whole lot of money, she also adopted, as her children, several adult men.
Was this Jean-Jacques Gabor's husband or something?
So we're getting there. Okay.
Hold on. This old princess woman adopted grown men
adopted
to be
her sons.
Right.
Well, think about this.
Look at you. The look on your face is so...
Like, do
you
wanna, am
do
I
wanna,
there?
Do you want to take a guess as to why she might be doing that? It's not... has nothing to do with sex or anything.
They get a title.
So, let's say you have a whole bunch of money and nowhere else to go with that.
Right.
You and princess... quote unquote Marie Auguste, because she's not a princess anymore.
Sure.
She needs money. Well, to have her adopt you just so you can get a title and you pay her for it would be super illegal.
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, none of them would ever say that.
On the record.
Yeah,
right.
And nobody would ever say that that's what happened, but it just so happens that she adopted several adult men. So why would they do that if there was no monarchy? Well, when the monarchy and the nobility were abolished, there was a little bit of a horse trading deal, which is the former members of the nobility were allowed to keep whatever title they had, but it became part of their surname. It became part of their last name. So the men that she adopted were legally allowed to take the surname Prinz von Anhalt, Prince of Anhalt, and style themselves as ersatz German princes.
Interesting.
And related to Kaiser Wilhelm.
Because they're related to the... I mean, sure, they abolished the monarchy, but as far as they're concerned, they are princes because their mom is the princess and their grandfather is the
king. They can draw you a little family tree and on
there
paper. Yeah.
So one of the men who was famously adopted by the Kaiser's daughter-in-law was used to be known as Hans Lichtenberg. He was the son of a police captain, but he took the name Frederick Prinz von Anhalt. And he is the ninth and current husband of Zsa Zsa Gabor.
I did not know this.
Yes.
Note, Zsa Zsa Gabor still alive.
And then
after he got the name, was able to take the name Frederick Prinz von Anhalt and married Zsa Zsa Gabor, they then adopted many adult men.
Oh my god!
And one of those men, his name is Marcus Prinz von Anhalt, who has a website. Just go to your browser and type in www.princegermany.com. I beg you to look at this website. It is breathtaking. I think that Karen
Maybe
might pull
it
up right now.
Squarespace?
He did not make it with Squarespace. PrinceGermany.com.
Wow, he did not make it in Squarespace.
With symmetrical photographs of himself riding a stallion.
A white steed.
Yes.
Okay.
He makes it very clear that he is, in fact, a prince.
Well, there's gold frames around all of his pictures, so,
So, of course, he is the adopted son of the adopted son of the daughter-in-law of the exiled former monarch of Germany.
But are people like...
Sure. Bravo was able to
Bravo
sell some shows.
Fell all over. Now, it wasn't Marcus here, but one of the other sons who was on Bravo, which is Prince Maximilian Ferdinand von Anhalt, and he was the guy who was on Millionaire Matchmaker, and he has a website too, and I kid you not, it is built with Squarespace.
It is?
It is.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yes, it is. It's
so maybe
they'll
write into us. And
yeah. So, yeah, if Germany still had a monarchy, he would be a prince. But if Germany still had a monarchy, none of this would have happened. And, yes, the princess wouldn't have adopted adult men who adopt adult men. And I'm sure that at some point in Prince Maximilian Ferdinand von Anhalt's life, he too will know the joy of adopting a 50-year-old man as his son.
We're all going to become German princes.
It's German princes all the way down.
Yeah. And they are absolutely, these are what would absolutely be considered today pretenders to the throne.
What if you're a woman?
Oh,
also
yeah.
be
sure, you
adopted?
Can be, you can be a German princess if you want to. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. No, why not?
If you have enough
they won't turn down your cash. They won't turn down your cash, basically. Yeah.
Which again, I need to stress for legal purposes, absolutely has not happened.
No.
Totally no. hasn't happened.
It's like a deep emotional
bond.
Nourishing, like cherishing bond.
A 90-year-old former princess.
It's to show their relationship.
And several 60-year-old rich men.
All right, I have a kind of a grab bag royalty quiz for you guys. Get your buzzers ready. We're going to buzz in. We'll just kick it off.
All right, dive right in.
When she always says, let's just kick it off, it's like the hardest question.
That's right. I'm going to work. Sorry, now
it's
I have
like,
to like
hold on, let me rearrange stuff here.
Hold on.
Is this a hard question? We'll see. Yeah. All right. In the United States, there are 7 states named for kings and queens. 4 for kings, 3 for queens.
Yeah.
Can you name them?
All right, we'll do this one together. Let's do this together.
Like,
all right.
Wait, 3 for queens.
And 4 for kings.
All right.
Four, so 7.
Georgia, I believe.
Yeah. Which one? Who was that for?
Oh, man. Which?
King George the
second. Okay. And that was like Madness of King George King, right? Was that George the second? Don't know. Oh. Don't know. It's an exercise for the listener.
For some reason, I'm thinking it's 3, okay. But I could be wrong. Okay.
Maryland as well, right? Yes.
Not for king.
Okay.
For queen.
Yes. Okay.
Oh. Virginia.
Carolinas?
Yes. For King Charles the First.
Oh, I see.
Right. Like
I see.
The Latin name, right? Like Carolinas or...
You have North and South Carolina. You have Georgia and Maryland and Virginia.
Okay.
Who's
so
the other...
Five.
Who's the other queen?
Oh, West Virginia. Also.
West Virginia.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Just ticking that one off.
And then there's one more.
Hawaii?
No.
Oh, that'd be a
good trip. North Carolina, South Carolina.
Georgia.
Georgia.
It's a French king.
Oh, Louisiana.
Charlemagne.
Louisiana.
Of course.
Yes, King Louis the 14th of France.
That's cool.
What does HMS stand for? Everybody.
Her Majesty's stuff.
His or her Majesty's ship.
Okay. Well, it changes depending on who is ruling, right?
Currently, it's Her Majesty's ship.
It's been Her Majesty for a long time.
Data didn't say what it used to stand for.
Yes, you're right.
It's true. So, the Titanic was built in Belfast, and there's some letters that come before its name, that have to do with royalty. Do you know what they are?
Oh.
Before the name of the Titanic?
Before the Titanic.
R, not HMS.
Said it was built in Scotland? No.
In Belfast.
Belfast.
What is it? The RMS, Royal Mail Ship.
Mail Ship.
Oh, that's right. Okay.
Mail?
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
M-A-I-L or female mail? Oh, okay.
No.
Like deliver mail.
No, the Royal Boy Ship. No, it's the delivery mail.
Got it.
That's right.
Oh, okay.
That's right. RMS Titanic. Yeah, that's right. As soon as you said it, yeah.
Did it deliver mail?
Among other things.
Oh, yeah.
Well, didn't get that. Not successfully,
Okay, just a couple more questions. The royal disease is a euphemism for what kind of disease?
Wasn't that hemophilia?
Hemophilia, Do you know which queen is kind of said to be responsible for spreading that?
Catherine? No, I think it's like a Russian.
Is it Maryland?
It's Victoria.
Was it Victoria?
Yes.
The disease where if you bleed, you'll just keep bleeding. Your blood doesn't dry up and
you have difficulties, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Okay, this character received a demotion from queen to princess.
Oh, no.
In the Candyland game.
Oh.
What? Oh, I don't remember their names.
Like when we played it, she was a queen and now she is a princess.
Princess Candy Cane.
No.
Bubblegum.
Do you remember who the queen was in Candyland?
Man. my 5-year-old brain
dress.
Does.
She's near the end.
Gumdrop?
Of the game. No.
Oh,
a blue dress.
She was Queen Frustine.
Queen
and now
Frustine.
She's Princess Frustine.
Is that just
I wonder why.
So the kids can relate to her better?
I don't know. Yeah, it seemed like,
it's like
kind
she's
of...
just, she's just so old, so I can't get over
it. They slapped her down a bit.
Yeah,
they,
yeah, yeah.
Oh, you know what? That's probably what it is. They wanted to make her look younger, and they're like, all right, so we got to give her a younger title. Like, I don't approve. Mm-hmm.
In 2013, chocolate maker Mars phased out what? Chris.
King size candy box.
Yes.
Oh.
What?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, they are like 4,000 calories.
Yeah.
Oh, but now they have like the double pack or the.
Yeah.
It, yeah.
It's no. not king size. They just made it into
for sharing.
Two.
Yeah.
You could save it for later.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't think
yeah.
I even noticed that the king size kind of quietly disappeared.
Oh,
yeah.
Man.
Well, I see what your lifestyle is like. It's not a. In Alice's Adventures in Wonderland, she meets the Queen of Hearts. The Queen of Hearts really enjoys playing croquet. What are the special croquet pieces she uses?
Oh.
She uses a flamingo for
the mallet.
Yeah, for the mallet. Mm-hmm. And then a hedgehog for the ball.
Very nice.
And the hoops are...
Oh, hoops are the cards.
Her soldier.
Her guard.
Yeah, her soldiers.
Yeah,
her
cards. Yeah, yeah.
Yep.
Was that in the book or also in the movie?
It was also
it was
in
the movie.
Book.
Oh, okay. It's in the book, too? Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
Yep, yep, yep. And finally, what American beer was known as the King of Beers?
Whoa.
Budweiser.
Budweiser. Yes.
Yeah. Budweiser.
What's the champagne of beers?
That is Miller Lite.
MGD.
No.
Oh, no.
Miller High Life.
Oh, Miller High Life.
Oh, Miller always don't High remember. Life. Okay, champagne of beers. Miller High Life. King of beers. The different royalty ranks
of beers. The foot of beers.
The pretender to the throne of beers. Yeah. This like is a, just a cream
like
soda.
Old
yeah.
That's an old duel.
It's an old duel, you're right. That's what it would be. Well, something that's always fascinated me about royal life and courtly life is all the specialized roles that go along with just, you know, you're the king or queen. No one expects you to do anything for yourself. So you've got all these other just attendants with one very particular job. I was always really fascinated as a kid by the royal taster. Like, you know, like,
like
my dad would make a joke or something. He's like, oh, what are you, the royal taster? And I was like, what is that? And it's like, oh, it's a person who would taste the king's food before they eat. I was like, that's not
we
a
just
thing.
Make
that's
sure
not,
that it's
that's not a thing.
It's not delicious?
No. To make sure that it's
not poisoned.
Not poisoned.
Oh, yeah. Back then, they really liked pulling that kind of stuff.
I mean, especially if you go way, way, way back before modern forensic science, before any of this stuff, it's, you know, you don't have any lab tests on your wine. You have someone taste it for you, and you hope that they're okay. We know the Romans had royal tasters, the Egyptians, the Chinese, like every ancient, you know, emperor, imperial culture, there are records of some leaders having tasters. It's exactly what you think it is before the king or the queen or, you know, whomever sits down to eat, this person comes in, samples a little bit, drinks maybe a little bit of the wine, and you kind of watch them, make sure there's no adverse effects.
How long, though?
And then you go ahead and eat the meal.
I think about that, too. It's like, oh, you could have
a slow-moving
or... It requires a high dose, like more than a set.
Yeah.
That was my first thought, too.
I like how we're, like, deconstructing.
Like, wait, how do you get around this?
How do we get around this?
If I were going to poison someone. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, well, that's the first question that all of us had is, it's like, well, wait, but aren't poisons slow acting? And,
right.
And the answer is, well, yeah, there are a lot of...
Yeah.
If you're trying to, you know, poison a king or a queen or somebody, unless you're just really brazen about it, the best way to do it is... slowly, with a slow-acting poison. So you don't want them to take a sip of wine and then face down on the table. Yeah,
right. You want to be far away, first of all.
Exactly. And, you know, they did. Obviously, they had fast-acting poisons. I mean, even in ancient time, they were well aware of things that could kill instantly.
It's like the royal taster can't get the slow-acting stuff, but just in case there was some fast-acting stuff, it's like another line of defense.
No, you're totally right. You're in on both counts. Like, one, it's kind of like, it's the last line of defense. And two, it's also there is sort of this element of security theater there. It's either on the one hand you could look at it as like a placebo where if you're the queen or the duke or whatever you're like, oh, I feel better having my royal
exactly.
I'm going to be more confident.
And nobody's going to go in and say, your majesty, we've run the numbers.
Probably
you don't need to do this.
And it does. It also kind of projects an image of like, oh, well, he's got a taster. You know, I got to be careful. Like they're on it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, except for the one time when some poison gets through, it's actually a pretty good gig, all things considered. Yeah. I mean, you know, you're tasting food that most people in your will never get to taste. You know, any dignitary that comes through your court, you get to be there. And aside from meals, you know, your day's mostly open. You're just hanging out, watching the show.
There's just a non-zero possibility that, every time you perform your service, you'll instantly die.
So it's funny. I was doing a fair amount of research on just the history of royal tasting and imperial tasters and leaders and things like that. And it kind of fell into two groups. Like, you would either pull your royal taster from some slaves or just, the workers in the field. Someone out here, come in, you're expendable. Doesn't matter if you get poisoned. Or you go the other direction, which was like, no, my taster is like one of my most trusted aides. Like, it's somebody who has a lot to lose and is a true believer in my cause. I could not find a whole lot of reports of, tasters kind of failing their jobs. And you got to go way back. There are definitely, in Roman times, there are some emperors that have been poisoned.
Taster's like... Yeah, they put it in the Brussels sprouts.
I really don't like them.
Here's the thing, too. It also works as a good double check. You know, again, like, this is, you don't have modern science. Like, if your queen mysteriously dies a day after a banquet.
Oh, right.
And the taster also dies a day after the banquet. You're like, okay, well, we got a pretty good idea. We can narrow this down.
It's a trailing indicator.
Famously, a lot of people who write about royal tasting, they all have the same anecdote about Halotus, who was the official taster for Emperor Claudius in Roman times, and Claudius died. He was poisoned.
Oh,
and,
man.
It seems that Halotus may have actually been complicit in the plan because he survived.
That's the perfect...
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So you got to make sure it's somebody you really trust. Yeah, they're not sure, of course. This is many, many years ago. But Nero, who assumed the throne after, they think that he may have basically, been in cahoots with his royal taster.
Was Halotus a slave?
Yeah.
Either way, the beauty of this job is that if everything goes right, best case scenario is that nothing happens.
And, again, if you were elevated, this is unskilled labor. Like, if you were elevated from having to break your back in the fields
to a court,
hanging out in the court, probably going to die out there from a million different things anyway. Are the actual odds, the percentages, play in the numbers here, that you will die in a random work-related accident? If you're getting elevated from farmer to royal food taster, it's probably going down. The number of things that can kill you while you're just chilling in the king's court probably just went down.
I like the actuarial-minded approach to this.
Right,
Like, but now you're hanging out with people who, hate each other and do weird stuff with each other.
Yeah, but again, your life was going to be short and terrible. And now it's moderately longer and but really interesting.
Hitler did, famously.
I mean, not that he's royalty.
No, and you're right. I mean, it actually...
It's anybody who thinks they might be assassinated.
That's right. And it's not too much of a leap from royalty in the traditional days to world leaders. No, you're right. Hitler did very famously have a food taster. And he was extremely paranoid dude, of course. Vladimir Putin has a full... this very day, has a full-time food taster. President Barack Obama has... food tasters.
Oh, really?
Yes. Oh, my.
This came up a couple of years ago. Someone, a journalist, sort of offhandedly noted this in an article, and a lot of people are like, wait, what? Obama has food tasters?
Because you think about it as being like medieval times.
Right, you do. Yeah. Right. It totally seems like, Robert Baratheon and his food taster, not, Barack Obama. Mm-hmm. And so, of course, a lot of people at first were like, King Obama with his tasters, what is this? Yeah. And then... people were like, no, this is a pretty sensible thing. The Secret Service, of course, sensibly, they won't comment on the specifics of any part of this protection.
That
it exists or doesn't exist. But it makes sense, and someone's got to, clear his food. And again, part of it is also just his personal tastes. Maybe the president has allergies, that kind of thing. But to be very blunt about it, part of it is to make sure no one's messed with the food. Mm-hmm. So, as you look into this a little more, this isn't some new thing that Obama instituted. George W. Bush had the same thing.
Oh.
He had tasters and aides when they would go out to eat a lot, always bringing his own water, bringing his own condiments, yeah. like any sauces or anything. They bring that with
wow.
them. They would wipe down all the plates. They wipe down all the silverware. I mean, they're very protective yeah. of, you know, our president. Clinton as well had tasters. George H.W. Bush had tasters. Ronald Reagan had tasters as
wow.
well. And they kind of, you know, they don't talk a whole lot about it, but it makes sense. It really does make sense. And especially when they're traveling.
Mm-hmm.
I guess this kind of ruffles some feathers sometimes. But when they're traveling, if you're at like a foreign dinner somewhere, you know, like, sorry, no, we're tasting anything that before
and
the
I'm
president
sure not,
eats it.
They're not the only tasters at like a royal banquet with other world leaders.
They're getting in line behind Putin's guy.
Yeah.
And you know, part of it is of course just general security too, like ensuring tasting is also monitoring the kitchen and make sure nobody unauthorized has access to the food and things like that.
That was awesome. Let's take a quick break. A word from our sponsor.
For nearly four decades, JMK Security Solutions has provided protection for homes and businesses. I know firsthand. I'm Jeff Beckman, and with my wife, Kim, we started JMK Security Solutions. Our attention to detail, service after the sale, and product knowledge are the foundation of our success. JMK Security has routinely been recognized as the best of Madison for security companies. We expect that trend to continue as the next generation, our son Jeffrey, takes over as president. Let us protect what is valuable to you. JKSecurity.com.
Hey, Matt. Did you know that wombats poop cubes?
Nope. Never heard that before.
Did you know the unicorn is the national animal of Scotland, Ken?
I didn't know, nor do I care.
Neil, did you know that Liechtenstein is the only doubly landlocked country in Europe?
Jeff, isn't that an American pop artist?
Well, actually, it's both. If you want to learn things like that and more, join us each week on Triviality, a pub trivia-style game show podcast where a lack of seriousness meets a little bit of knowledge.
Listen in each week to answer general knowledge trivia alongside exciting guests from around the world.
And we're here too.
Join us every Tuesday for new hour-long episodes of Triviality, plus tons of extra theme content on everything from The Office and Lord of the Rings to science and geography.
And sometimes we even do sports.
Find us on all your preferred podcast apps and take part in the fun of playing bar trivia without the need to wear pants.
Real mature, Jeff.
Forget it, Neil. It's Triviality.
You're listening to Good Job Brain. Smooth puzzles, smart trivia. Good Job Brain.
So, speaking of royalty and royal surnames, and I have a quiz concept that I think it's going to be better than Brad Pitt or Lasers. I think it's going to have more longevity. I think people are really going to love this one.
Throwing down some gauntlets.
We can get a lot of juice out of this. I've written down the name on a piece of paper, and I want you all to say it with enthusiasm when I show you. Here is the name of the quiz you're all about to take.
Carol or Steven.
That's right. It's the game show where you guess whether I'm about to give you the title of a song by singer-songwriter Carol King or the title of a short story by master of the macabre Stephen King.
Oh, I get it.
Okay.
Now
you will write
more
down
longevity,
for each
more
one.
Longevity.
I guess they're prolific, but they don't have more
by
things
more,
than everything.
By more longevity,
and
I mean we probably got this, and that's probably about it.
Okay. All right.
So, you're going to write down either Carol or Stephen in response to these questions. I will give you the title, and you will tell me which king penned it. Question one: The Snow Queen. The Snow Queen. Is this a song by singer-songwriter Carole King, or is this a short story by Stephen King? Carol or Stephen? The Snow Queen. We got some answers. Karen has an answer. Colin, Dana says Stephen. Colin says Stephen, and Karen says Carol. It is a song by Carole King. 1 point on the board for Karen. Dolan's Cadillac. Dolan's Cadillac. Is it a story? Wow, is it a story about a car that kills people, or is it a car that she just used to drive when she was a teenager?
Cadillac.
Exactly, Dolan's Cadillac. Caroler Steven. Dana says Stephen. Colin says Stephen. Karen says Stephen. It is a short story by Stephen King, in which a guy is buried alive in his Cadillac.
Yikes!
Oh, I think I read that.
Oh, yeah,
right. Yeah, that sounds familiar now.
Main Street Saturday Night. Is it a song by Carole King or a short story by Stephen King? Main Street Saturday Night. Karen says Carole. Colin says Carole. Dana says Carole. Yes, it is a song by Carole King.
I can imagine it as Stephen King story.
But they're tougher than you think they are, aren't they? Exactly. Well, you hear it, and it's like, it can be anything.
And as always, our natural tendency to psych ourselves out.
Of course. Well, here's one for you. My Pretty Pony. My Pretty Pony. Is this a song by Carole King or a short story by Stephen King? Does the pony murder people?
Yeah. Is it a possessed pony?
Right, yes, yeah. Exactly. Is it just a pony?
Or is it a bittersweet pop
ballad?
Carole
King likes to ride around the mountains of we got Dana says Carole, Colin says Carole, and Karen says Carole. My Pretty Pony is a short story by Stephen King.
About what?
It is about time. It's a very short. Yeah, it's not about murder or anything. Uncle Otto's truck. Otto's truck.
Man.
Is it a song by Carole King?
Jeez.
Or one of Stephen King's, as it turns out, many, many short stories.
About automobiles.
About a truck that kills people. He keeps going back to that theme, but is this one of them? Is this one of them, or is it just about Carole King's Uncle Otto? Dana says Stephen. Colin says Carole, and Karen says Carole. It is a short story by Stephen King about a truck that comes to life and kills people. Points on the board for Dana.
He got hit by a van. I feel like that would be a pivotal, seminal part of your life.
Right.
Relationship.
In case
with
you're
cars.
Keeping track, Colin has 2 points. Dana and Karen tied for first with 3 points each. The Hard Rock Cafe. The Hard Rock Cafe. Is it a song by Carole King or is it a short story by Stephen King? Could be either. Karen is locked in. Colin is still thinking about it. Dana is locked in. Colin says Stephen. Dana says Carole. And Karen says Carole. It is a song by Carole King.
It was Hard Rock Cafe named after?
No. I think she actually wrote it for the Hard Rock
Cafe. Makes sense.
Yep.
Marketing.
Yeah.
Okay. Smackwater Jack. Smackwater Jack. A song, a folk hero song, or a man who rises out of the swamp and murders people. Okay, Colin says Stephen. Dana says Stephen, and Karen says Stephen. Smackwater Jack is a person who murders a bunch of people.
in a
song by Carole King.
Wait, really?
Yes.
Oh my god.
Yes.
So we all got it wrong.
Yep. The Man Who Loved Flowers. The Man Who Loved Flowers. Is it a touching ballad by Miss Carole King about a man who
shows his vulnerability?
Exactly, in his love for botany, or a story about a truck that kills people? It is. Right. Karen says Stephen. Colin says Stephen, and Dana says Stephen. It is a Stephen King short story about a man who is Stephen King short story. You all get 1 point. Congratulations. Right. It is about a man who loves flowers and murders women who wear flowers. And finally, one last one. You know they got a hell of a band. You know they got a hell of a band.
Literally hell?
Okay, so Karen says Carol. Colin says Carol. And Dana says Stephen. It is a Stephen King short story about a couple driving through the woods who find themselves in a town where all the dead musicians of the 50s and 60s live and force the people of the town to watch concerts that go on for years. And it is basically heck for them. It is not so good. It is not one of his most beloved short stories. Who got that right? Dana got that right.
Yeah.
Thus, with 6 points,
under
Dana
the wire, yeah,
rocks the whole place and wins.
Wow.
Carol or Stephen.
Wow.
Okay.
Like, they really could go both ways.
They
like,
really, yeah, like, yeah, that's yeah, right. Yep.
I like the both Carole feet King song about the killer. that was good. That was good. Yeah, just spiritually on point for both. Yeah.
We're like, it's definitely something about, this is a murderer's
name. I was
name,
really,
for sure,
really hoping, Jeff, yeah, because, I mean, there's the list of Stephen King short stories and list of Carole King songs, they're so prolific that I was hoping that
there'd
would
be a
both.
Yeah.
And then I could throw in the both as a, you know, total game changer. Yeah. There was not.
Yeah. Yeah.
I thought Sweetwater Jack was, I know.
Smack Water Jack. Please, Karen, yeah, please. Smack Water Jack.
Yeah.
Stand By Me was based on Stephen King's
the body,
story.
Right?
Yeah. The Body, yeah. I thought maybe that was the name.
Of
the body. Mm-hmm. All right, so I'm going to ask you guys a question.
All right.
Hopefully
all right.
You guys will answer the same answer I have in my head or planned.
Oh, uh-huh, no. Uh-huh. That never works.
Yeah,
that never works. Yeah. When you think of the color of royalty, what do you think? What color do you think of?
Purple.
Purple or gold?
Yeah.
Purple, always. The color of royalty, always associated with royalty, obviously probably from a bygone era. Why do you think it is associated with royalty? Why do you think, you know, royalty back in the day wore purple?
I've read explanations. I don't know if the explanation is correct or not.
Okay, so I'll throw this out there. Is it because purple dye was, like, so expensive that,
the
royalty could afford to have anything dyed purple?
That's what I had always
Pretty much.
Oh,
I mean, just, like, a lot of the nobility, a lot of royalty, even the food tasters, obviously, they eat better food, and it's because they can afford it. And purple dye, and this is kind of hard for, I guess, the modern-day generation to think about, like...
You kids.
Before we had technological advances in science and machinery and mass production and chemistry, you know, people used to have to get weird stuff for dyes, like natural occurring things. Like berries or barks or leaves.
Your yellow would come from egg yolk.
Yeah.
And you would find them in nature. Yeah. Minerals.
Also, even if you're like, oh, well, that blueberry has the right shade of purple I want, I'll just use the blueberry juice. You crush the blueberries, you dye a piece of cloth, then you put it in the sun and the color goes away.
Right, that's right.
Or you put it in the wash and all of a sudden it's gone. Like, it has to not only be the right color, it also has to last. Mm. And this is a lot of the, you know, why dyes were such a big part of trade.
Yeah.
So the word purple.
Oh.
Where do you guys think the word purple comes from? I mean, it has a Latin and Greek
word. I don't know. Did we talk about this on an old episode of the show about the fact that there is no color purple?
Yes.
Like, we did.
Yeah.
Violet or indigo.
Yeah.
Right. Those are the colors, right?
But purple, the word.
Purple describes a range. But I don't know where it comes from. Yeah. Does it come
Latin?
From like a plant or something? Or?
Purple comes from purpura.
Oh, okay.
And purpura was the name of the purple dye known as Tyrian purple.
Mm-hmm.
A very specific, not even shade, but a very specific dye.
Mm-hmm.
It's the dye compound.
As in Lannister?
I mean, I'm sure maybe that's
where
why
it came from. Yeah,
yeah, I mean,
sure.
Like, because it's a royal.
Right.
Tyrian of the city Tyre.
Mm-hmm.
If you're from the city Tyre, which was an old Phoenician city, now currently a Lebanon in that area, Phoenicians are a network of people, and it's kind of hard to pinpoint where, but they are definitely around the coast of the Mediterranean.
Mm-hmm.
And Phoenicia, that name comes from the land of the purple.
Mm-hmm.
They were the number one people who had purple dyes.
Ah. Wait, that's where Phoenicia comes
that's
from?
That's when Phoenicia, land of purple.
Like, we're Purple Town, USA.
Like,
of all the things it could be named after, it's named
purple.
After the purple. Yeah.
Purple, and that's and then, of course, Tyre is a city, and then Tyrian purple is the name of the dye, and this is, like, 1500 BC. Why this Tyrian purple is so rare and expensive is because what it's made out of. And it's made out of something really, really weird. And the way to get it is really, really weird. This is from a type of sea snail. Tyrian purple is farmed from sea snail. In nature, these snails, they're called murex snails. And when you, if you look them up, they kind of look like a one of the kind of classic seashell shape. The snail secretes a substance when it's about to attack or when it's feeling defensive. The dye can be collected by milking the snails, by scaring them.
This is awesome.
It's not like a dog, you know. Yeah. It's like a tiny shell.
It's not like milking a dog, you guys. Yeah, it's totally different from milking
a
dog.
It's like your first thought. Animals you milk, dogs.
In terms of size, like it's not like a big seashell. It's little sea snail.
So you got to scare it a lot.
Yeah, you got to scare a lot. And you know, it's labor intensive, but the good thing is it's renewable. You just keep scaring them.
Okay.
Just keep making them.
I'm so stressed out, man.
And they live in terror. You know, you can also kill them. They just crush the snails and collect the juice or the mucus.
They have to find out what the snail's deepest fear is.
Psychological terror.
12,000 snails yield no more than 1.5 grams of pure dye.
That's like
12,000.
That's ridiculous.
A little vial of it.
Wow.
How did they figure this out?
I know that's always our number one question. Someone had to figure it out.
Right.
Who, you know, what happened? I couldn't verify this story, but there is a story floating.
Okay.
Kind of good, because this is we're dealing with 1500 BC. So the story goes, there's some dude who has a dog.
Okay.
And the dog was chewing up snails.
Oh yeah.
And then after a while he realized that his dog's teeth were purple.
Sure. Like eating a popsicle.
Plausible.
Could be.
Right.
There are many different ways I was kind of reading of how they actually get the dye. This is the best one I found. Fishermen or Phoenicians bait them using frogs or mussels, which are animals that they would eat.
Okay.
The murex snails would come in and then they get fished. The vein that contains the pigment or the mucus, the secretion, is then extracted, either being feared or just pulled out and killing the snail. That part, that squishy part, is then mixed with salt and it's heated in vats to separate the water and the actual pigment.
Okay.
So that makes sense. You're kind of like drying it out.
And does it look purple when it comes out of the snail?
Mm-hmm.
All right.
It also reacts with sunlight, and the secretion at first, it's white or clear, and then under the sun, it will start turning different colors from yellowish to greenish, and then like to a reddish, and then to a purplish, and gets darker and darker. This process, they have to monitor it and stop it at the right time.
Oh, yeah. Stop it at purple.
To get the color. To get purple. And this color lasts long.
Huh.
That is the classic royalty purple, is Tyrian purple.
Fascinating.
Wow.
Okay.
The purple
snails.
People. Phoenicians are the purple people.
Purple land.
That's great.
Calling all kids in the car. Brittany and Meredith here from the chart-topping Family Road Trip Trivia Podcast. Are you dreading another silent car ride with the fam? We've got the cure. 3 rounds of fresh trivia every single week. Movies, music, even science and Disney. We've got something for every trivia buff in the car. No more crickets chirping on those long journeys. The Family Road Trip Trivia Podcast is your secret weapon for connecting and laughing with kids of all ages, teens, toddlers, adults, it doesn't matter. Spark their curiosity and challenge their brains with every episode. New episodes drop weekly wherever you get your podcasts. Search for the Family Road Trip Trivia Podcast and turn those car rides into epic adventures.
All right, we got one last segment. Colin?
Yes, we do.
Kick it to you.
I thought for the royal episode, it would be appropriate to bring back the king.
Mm-hmm,
and by which I mean Elvis.
Oh, yeah.
The king of rock and roll. This quiz is all royalty-themed songs. If you have not heard an Elvis quiz before, the way this works is we have a computerized 1980s-sounding robot voice who will read the opening lines of hit songs from all eras.
He can't sing because he's an 80s robot.
He will speak the opening lines of several hit songs from all eras, all genres, devoid of soul and rhythm. And your job is to tell me what is the song and who is the artist.
So it's either the song title or the artist that has a royalty theme, like a...
Yeah, that's right. The clue to the royal connection will be somewhere in the song title or the artist title. Here we go.
I've never seen a diamond in the flesh. I cut my teeth on wedding rings in movies. And I'm not proud of my address. In a torn-up town, no postcard envy.
I think you guys all got it there.
Royals.
By Lord.
Royals by Lord. Very good, very good. All right, moving right along. Number two. Who is the song and or artist?
The sound that you're listening to is from my guitar. That's named Lucille. I'm very crazy about Lucille. Lucille took me from the plantation, or you might say brought me fame.
Chris.
Well, this is B.B. King.
Yeah.
Oh, my
and
God.
But I don't know the title of the song.
Lucille. Don't overthink it. Yeah, the name of the song is
Lucille.
Oh, my Lucille.
God. Lucille. I even thought B.B. King, but I was like, but that's B&B. That's not Lil Billy. Oh, my God.
I can't be bothered to finish his name. Yes, B.B. King. with his guitar famously named Lucille. Lucille.
Okay,
yes, that's his ode to Lucille. All right. Next one. Here we go. Who and what is this?
So if you're lonely, you know I'm here waiting for you. I'm just a crosshair. I'm just a shot away from you.
Oh,
Chris.
Franz Ferdinand.
Yes.
Take Me Out.
Yes.
Yes. Oh, yes. I see.
Yes.
Not a
yes.
title, yeah. but a famous
but an Archduke.
Royal person.
Yes. 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 Of course, named after Archduke Franz Ferdinand.
Mm. Of course.
Of course. No, actually, we're not.
No.
We're named after my college roommate, Franz Ferdinand. Yes, Take Me Out, Franz Ferdinand. All right, next one. Here we go. Who and what?
The ladies will kick it, the rhyme that is wicked. Those that don't know how to be pros get evicted.
The ladies will... Oh, Karen.
Queen Latifah.
Yeah.
Hey.
Queen Latifah.
I remember the video.
It's a ladies first.
Ladies first, yes.
All right, getting a little more difficult here as we're going. All right, next one. Who and what is this track?
Goodbye, England's rose. May you ever grow in our hearts. You were the grace that placed itself where lives were torn apart.
Where lives were torn apart. I think you guys both got that one there, Chris, Karen?
This is Elton John's Candle in the Wind, 1997.
Thank you, Chris. Yes. Owning it, yes.
For Princess Di.
That's right. Yes, the lyrics originally about Marilyn Monroe, reworked by Elton John and Bernie Taupin for Princess Di's memorial. All right, next one. Here we go. Who and what? Remember the theme. Here we go.
She said, I'll throw myself away. They're just photos after all. I can make you hang around. I can wash you off my skin.
This is in the last 10 years. Chris.
Kings of the Stone Age.
Oh, you did so close! Queens of the Stone Age.
Oh, wait, hold on. What song? Can wash your skin. It's a rock band. No one knows.
I do think it is in a rock band, yes.
It is a rock band. It's in Rock Band 1. Oh, my God.
It is.
I should go.
She's dancing around it. It's Go with the Flow.
Go with the Flow!
Yes, Go with the Flow.
Yeah, I mean...
You were spiritually right. Yeah.
Right. I was thinking of the right band, but I don't know anything about that band. Even what the band's name is. Exactly.
Is it Dukes of the Bronze Age?
Got it on, you know?
Yeah.
Got it on the back half. Back nine were better to me than the front nine.
All right, last one.
Louie, oh no, Set, we gotta go. Yeah. Set, Louie. Oh, baby. Set, we gotta go.
Yeah. Chris.
The Kingsmen?
Yeah.
Louis.
Yeah.
Oh,
me gotta go.
Yeah. Yeah. Much disputed.
Yeah.
As made famous by the Kingsmen, as the classic.
Oh.
Yeah.
Like, where's Kings of Leon or Queen?
Yeah.
Can't fit them all in. Can't fit France in. Yeah. I actually.
I read an alternate universe where you wrote that quiz, basically.
Duke.
Oh, could be. Well, so many options.
I wanted to avoid Queen and Prince. I wanted to see.
Right. Two princes. Would it be?
Oh, one, two.
Yeah.
Who's saying that? Spin doctors.
Yeah. Asked and answered.
This is like the bonus quiz.
Karen quizzing herself. Actually, I did have.
I did that all the time.
Yeah.
I'd think of something and be like, who did that?
The question that I didn't really want to get rid of because I thought this was really interesting and I had to because, you know, sometimes you gotta kill your darlings, as they say.
Yeah.
So,
bringing it back.
As they say, I am bringing it back. A bonus question to end the show. The Mall of America.
Yes.
Yeah. Is not the biggest mall in the United States. What is the biggest mall in the United States?
King Prussia.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
The King of Prussia Mall.
No, we haven't heard that.
And where is that?
Pennsylvania.
It is in King of Prussia, Pennsylvania, right outside of Philadelphia. Yeah, that is the, by square footage total area, that is the biggest mall. The Mall of America has more stores.
Mm. Oh, God.
But the stores in the King of Prussia Mall are bigger.
The Mall of America has more Minnesotans.
It does. Yeah, a lot more.
By volume. More Minnesotans, All right, well, good job from Elvis, the king. You guys know your royals, and you know your King of Prussia.
I do.
Well done.
I've been there before.
Yeah.
When I had to go to geek camp.
Oh.
Had to.
What, really?
Had to.
Yeah, because we'd fly in Philadelphia, and then my mom would make us go to the malls to buy clothes and stuff.
Okay.
And then
we'd
drive to Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
Oh, nice.
For a geek camp.
Maybe had to.
I had to.
Yeah.
Had to learn math. All right, well, that is our show. Thank you guys for joining us, and thank you guys, listeners, for listening in. Hope you learned a lot of stuff about food tasting, about, Carol King or Stephen King, Color Purple, and more. And you can find us on iTunes, on Stitcher, on SoundCloud, and on our website, goodjobbrain.com. Thanks to our sponsor, Squarespace, and we'll see you guys next week.
Bye.
Batter, are you ready to hit a home run with flavor? Step up to the plate and swing by Penn Station East Coast Subs, where every bite is a grand slam. Craving a classic Philly cheesesteak or maybe a savory chicken teriyaki? Or how about loading up on their delicious fresh-cut fries? Call it a triple play by ordering Penn Station's signature fresh-squeezed lemonade. When it comes to subs, Penn Station is the big league. Order online at penn-station.com or stop at a store near you. Penn Station East Coast Subs.